Mother's Day to all you mothers out there. Hopefully you're all out enjoying the great outdoors. And for
and
our
the
listeners,
awesome weather today.
Yeah, very good weather.
80, so yeah. It's going to be nice.
This is about the best weather we've had. Hey, and also, hopefully you went, you got mom something new for the truck at Truck Envy, a new gun from Legacy Sports International.
Yeah.
Or a new bow from Hunt and House Archery Center. I was over there the other day, and they're getting more of those EVA Shockey bows.
Those
are selling
so
like hotcakes.
Yeah, those are so popular. Yes. Well, we had two ladies in our Reading group. Both of them were shooting that EVA Shockey. And I got to say, for one, is fast as heck.
Yeah.
And two, it was like whisper quiet.
Quietest bow I've ever heard.
Oh, man. You couldn't. I mean, granted, they were probably, I think the one lady who said she's shooting 40 pounds. Still, it just, yeah, it just.
That's it.
It was fantastic. Yeah. And they were shooters. Those two gals could shoot.
Okay, so I didn't want to launch right into this rabbit hole, but I'll talk about Reading a little bit. Just goes to show you, it's the Indian, not the arrow.
Yes.
Because those two guys, they were from Nampa, I think.
Nampa, Idaho.
They shot, I was going back looking at my score and everything. That one guy, Marvin, shooting pins. So no fancy equipment like the rest of us.
No big stabilizers. No, just straight up hunting setup.
He beat me.
He did?
Yeah, by a couple points.
Yeah. He was pretty.
That guy could shoot.
He could shoot.
Yeah.
That dude could
all
shoot.
Of them. But yeah, those EVA Shockeys, man, they're selling like hotcakes. Great bow. I know they had some. They sold through what they initially got at Hunting House. They got some more coming in. So hopefully everybody went out and got your mom something nice.
Yes.
Or got a mom in your life something nice.
Exactly. Yeah, kids, don't buy your mom a catcher's mitt.
A DeWalt drill.
DeWalt drill. You know.
Hey, Cynthia, this year I got you a new Husqvarna chainsaw. No, I'm kidding. No.
Well, Mom, I hope you are enjoying your espresso machine.
Yeah, that's right. You got your mom an espresso machine.
Yes, I did.
Dave, this is going to be another one of those episodes where we might run out of time. We got a lot of ground to cover with this commission meeting that happened while we were at Reading.
Yeah.
Where do you want to dive into that?
We can kind of dive into application season is over.
Yep.
It's done. Numbers are in. The Department of Wildlife is an all-time high in regards to the number of individual applications.
How many was it?
A little over 474,000 applications.
Almost 500,000 people applied for tags.
No, that's just the applications. So, like, you know, you and I applied for, what, 7 different tags?
Gotcha. So not 474,000 individuals.
Just applications.
Applications, okay.
For tags. So,
man,
that's
a pile.
That's up a lot. Since the new tag system came into play, 3 years ago, I think. Is that about right?
Yeah, I'll go there with
3 years.
Yeah.
That first year was 256,000 applications. So we've almost doubled that in 3 years.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah. So, but for individual, like actual physical people.
Right.
A little over 85,600 individuals applied for tags.
Is that number up?
Yes.
Down? Oh,
yeah,
up
that's also up
okay.
quite a bit. So this is all-time high for applications and individuals. So, and then the big one, as everyone's been clamoring about, is the moose hunt. So
10 non-resident tags only.
Yeah.
Right?
10. Two. Two. And
two resident tags.
Yeah.
Like we've been, didn't you? You said two or three is
what you
thought. I said
two or three is what I was thinking. So,
yep.
And it ended up being two. So, sorry, everybody. You know, Henry and I are going to probably draw those two tags. So, we'll let you guys know how the hunt went.
Yeah, exactly.
So, of that, there were 25,000 applications for the moose hunt.
Yep.
25,000.
Oh, that's right. We did the math.
Yeah. For two tags, you come out to your chance of pulling the tag is 0.00008%.
Yep.
So
you're saying there's a chance.
So there's a chance.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like 30, I think it was like a little over 3,700 people just put in for bonus points for the moose.
Why?
Who knows? It could be
What's the time frame.
Maybe they have another hunt.
Out of state or something?
Yeah, I've got a friend who pulled an Idaho moose tag.
So
I understand, like, you know, something like a mountain goat tag, right? It's that hunt's been established. I just buy bonus points for it every year. One of these years I'll start putting in once I've accrued enough bonus points.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm probably there now. But with the moose thing, the way I look at it is you're going to get a bonus point if you're unsuccessful regardless. The playing field is level this first year.
Yeah, this is the only time. Yeah, that's why everybody has that 0.008%
chance.
Yeah,
so I'm kind of like, why do a bonus point? Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they, like I said, maybe they had another trip during that hunt period. They're like, well, I'm not going to be able to hunt it, but I still want the point.
All right.
So, you know, who knows?
Where else are we going with this?
Well, so, you know, a lot of people have asked about the $3, you know, like, what's this $3 fee go to? Like,
oh, and you can choose the, right.
You know, that kind of a deal. So how it kind of broke out this year is that $3 fee, 66% of that fee will go to predator management.
Okay.
And 34% of that fee is going to go to habitat improvements and restoration.
Okay, I thought it was an either-or option when I put in. I could choose whether or not, okay.
Yeah, and that's how it breaks down.
Gotcha.
Yeah, who's done what.
Okay, so with on the habitat front, does any of that trickle down to the feral horse population and managing that, or no, not at all?
No.
Because it's a BLM issue.
Correct. Okay. Yeah, that and Department of Ag, just there's no... Nothing in relation to feral horses.
On my applications, depending on what unit and species I was putting in for, a couple of them I did elect to do the habitat improvement because they were areas that had burned in recent memory or something.
Yeah.
But for most of them, look, for people listening, if you've spent any time out in the hills lately, holy smokes, the coyote population, the mountain lion population, the bear population.
Yeah.
I elected to put that money towards predator management. Do you know what that looks like as far as where that money goes?
No, I don't know the specific programming. The predator, you're talking the predator management.
Predator
stuff?
Management. So does that go toward predator removal or?
There's a whole suite of programs in relation to predator activities and management. You know, you have some removal stuff. You've got, you know, fencings. You've got all kinds of different programs.
Yeah, because perfect example, driving back from Redding.
Yeah.
Right there.
Remember that? Yeah.
Right there by Doyle. What do we count? 7 or 8 coyotes out in that field?
All together.
Broad daylight.
Just... all hanging out together in the field. There were, I think there were 7 of them.
Yeah.
We were like, whoa.
That's a lot.
Nuts. Yeah.
I've seen like a handful of them hanging out like in those ag fields, especially after a rain driving the rodents up to the surface. Yeah. But I don't know if I've ever seen 7 just standing there together like that.
Yeah, just kind of hanging out and milling through the grass. That's wild. Well, and there was another picture I noticed online in Nevada. It was out near Lovelock.
Okay.
3 mountain lions out there and kind of cruising across one of the ag fields out there.
Whoa.
Just, you know, because we had that earlier picture of what there were 5
that
mountain
video
lions.
That video of 5 moving together. Yeah.
This was out somewhere near Lovelock. And there's 3 mountain lions just kind of, you know, Sunday afternoon walk, just kind of cruising across the edge of an ag field.
Yeah. It's becoming more and more prevalent seeing them together. Yeah.
I got my mountain lion tags.
Oh, yeah. I do every year. Yeah.
I mean, every year.
I'm a...
The 1 year I didn't buy it was the 1 year that I actually got within proximity of one to shoot it. And I was like, geez, old Murphy.
So, yeah, lesson learned, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's it. Buying them every year now.
I elected to do that in some of those units because I know they're having a problem with predators. I got some questions for you as far as county advisory boards. I try not to step on too many toes, but I got my opinions there. Coming up, we'll get into a little more of the commission meeting. We'll get into some specific species stuff on tag numbers, allocations. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Welcome back. The show is Nevada Backcountry. 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Before we went to break there, we're starting to get into some of the numbers. And without making this real meandering and long-winded, I wanted to point out to people listening, I used to be in that camp where Endow was screwing up. Endow. I like to place the blame on Endow if tag allocations were cut. I think that's a majority of people out there. Becoming friends with you, Dave, and learning more about the way this system works, Endow biologists recommended a pretty significant increase in mule deer tags this year, correct?
Well, not significant. I'd say, I mean, it was a little bit of an increase.
Okay, a little bit of an increase.
Okay. In certain areas, based right. on, you know, all the survey work that's been done for the last year or so, especially with, you know, these last few years, we've had some really fantastic water years.
Right.
Which has aided in a lot better, you know, fawn production, seeing a lot more animals on the ground. So, you know, starting to see some growth. So, in turn, you up the management a little bit.
Right.
To maintain those really good, healthy herds.
So mm-hmm. why did we not get those increases in some units?
Well, so the process kind of goes along is the Department of Wildlife, the biologists and the division leads will go up and they will present their findings.
Right.
And then they will present their recommendations. There's about a week-long internal meeting in relation to quotas, where internally there's a lot of back and forth about, you know, what should be done, how many tags should be allocated, reasons why, you know, support material. It's quite a process. You know, you've got to bring it. You just can't walk in there and say, well, 10 sounds great. You've got to show proof why.
Right.
What makes it 10? After that, they have created the sheet that says these are our quotas. That's presented to the commission and to the CABs. And then the CABs get together. And
CABs are?
The county advisory board. So you have the Washoe County CAB, you've got the Elko CAB, you got Pershing County, Nye County.
Right.
You have, all the counties have their own advisory board.
And that's made up of five members?
Five members, sportsmen, the general public.
Okay.
So you've got a variety of folks that are on those CABs. And this year, there was some pretty good back and forth in relation.
You said it got pretty heated.
from what I understood, it got pretty contentious,
okay.
Which a lot of times these quota meetings do when you're starting to talk about quotas, especially in the years past. It got crazy wild. But like I said, it got a little contentious, and the commission made a decision to just go with what the CABs recommended.
Bingo. That's where I wanted to go with
this. So, you know, and this is the process. This is what is been set forth by, you know, the state. This is how the process is supposed to go. And the Department of Wildlife was like, okay, commission's made the decision and went about it. So as they were going through the mule deer quotas,
right,
and they went through certain areas, Elko, Area 6, 7, 10,
that's the big one.
The big one. They would bring up the CAB and say, what's your recommendation? They would provide their recommendation, and they said, okay, that's it. That's what we're doing.
Done. No more discussion. This is what we're doing.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, you know, sometimes you got really good years. Sometimes you've got mediocre years. It's an ebb and flow.
So on these county advisory boards, it's made up of sportsmen. There's a sportsman representative or a couple of them,
mm-hmm.
and then the public.
Yeah, you have public seats in there too, so that's not just swayed to one direction. You've got a variation of mindsets.
Right. So before the griping starts and people get on Endow about this, this is not the year to blame Endow for the cut in tags.
There will probably still be people doing that. But yeah, I mean, the tag allocation process, and it's multifaceted. You've got the commission making decisions, you've got the CABs making decisions, and you've got the Department of Wildlife making recommendations. So between all of that, they come up with what they feel is the best outcome for Nevada's wildlife.
Right.
It's not 100%, you know, Department of Wildlife walks in and just drops a brick down there and says, this is what we're doing this year. Boom, drops the mic and walks out. That's not how it works. It's recommendation, conversation, modification, hair pulling, decision.
So I used the example earlier. On the flip side of this, you know, you could be the owner of a local sporting goods store. You could get onto a county advisory board and you could decide that, hey, it's good for business, so I want more tags. And endow biologists could be saying, hey, wait, this herd's getting its butt kicked. We need to decrease some of these numbers. I want to make the point to people listening that, you know, the county advisory board thing strikes me as weird because it could be, you could be an overnight cab driver for crying out loud. Cab as in taxi cab,
yeah,
not Uber. County Uber. You could be an Uber driver and you could have influence on tag allocations in the state of Nevada.
Yes, you could.
Yeah. That sounds insane to me.
It has its goods and its bads, that's for sure. I mean, as we've noticed several years, you know, over a period of time, you know, it has its ebbs and flows. I mean, it's never going to be perfect. You're always going to have somebody who's upset about, you know, too many tags in this area, not enough tags in this area. Why are we even hunting this animal? Blah, blah, blah. You're always going to have that. These three groups get together, try to do the best they can for Nevada's wildlife and the habitat. And, you know, decisions are made, and that's kind of what we got to live with.
How many hours a month, let's say your average field biologist for Endow, how much time do they spend out surveying, collecting data?
During the meat and potatoes, like the really hardcore field season, which is about 6-7 months out of the year, field biologists could be in the field 60 hours a week, 60-70 hours a week.
Living out
it's
there.
It's just basically living out there, definitely. Okay. You could be out there for a week at a time just because some of these areas are fairly remote. You're not driving out somewhere. You know, some of these areas take 4 or 5 hours to get to. You're not going to drive out there and get a survey done and then rush home. You're just going to set up camp and you're going to cover that entire area because you and I, we've both been in Nevada. You drive out to a spot and you get to the top of the hill and then you see 15 other tops of the hills and you're like, whoa, this is a lot of land in front of me here.
Again, John Q. Public here.
Yeah.
To me, it seems insane that, and I'll keep using the example, an Uber driver.
Yeah.
Who, you know, maybe went on a hike to Church's Pond one day and decided they liked wildlife.
And they didn't see any deer,
so we got to cut deer tags. No, I mean that their advice would be taken with the same gravity that somebody who spends 60 hours a week in the field 6-7 months of the year, that their advice has.
Yeah, but then on this other side of that coin is if everything was left up to the Department of Wildlife to make all the decisions, imagine the amount of griping that would occur. Like, wait, that's not fair. You know, you guys have all the power and all the decision making, and we don't think that's right. So we bring in these other commissions and boards to kind of level that playing field a bit. You know, kind of be, in a sense, maybe devil's advocate in some instances or supporters in others, or providing ideas or recommendations to improve the surveys or the habitats or, you know, whatever it might be, whatever program it might be. They have a voice in the programming, approving them, making sure that they're done to a certain extent. So the boards are there to kind of help, like buffer.
Checks and balances.
Checks and balances. That's the word I was trying to fish in my head.
Okay.
But
yeah,
yes,
checks
and balances of it all. Sometimes it kind of goes awry and you're like, why, what? And you just sit there, just stare at the wall like, I'm not even sure what's going on right now. Those happen. I mean, it's just part of the process. I mean,
okay.
It just kind of is.
Yeah. But overall.
Overall.
So let's end on a high note here as we come to an end of this segment. We'll get into species-specific stuff next segment. Overall, though, mule deer tags, slight increase.
Mule deer is down.
Overall, mule deer is down,
yeah,
not just in certain areas?
Like, you know, certain areas took pretty good hits, like 6, 7, and 10.
Okay.
35% cut.
Right.
So that
right.
was like the highest.
And you said that was a contentious matter.
Yeah, well, the whole conversation was. And then certain areas, there's some areas where some tag locations that didn't get changed at all. If you look at last year's compared to the new tag quota for 24, a lot of them didn't change at all. And then there's some that took pretty good hits, and there's even increases in some.
I was about to say, come on, I'm trying to end on a high note.
No, but all the other, like antelope's up, elk is up.
Black bear 100% increase.
100% increase. There's plenty of opportunity for people to get out there, to get out in the field and hunt. If you don't draw a tag, first come, first serve. There's plenty of opportunity if you really, really want to get out there. If you want to sit on the sofa and bitch and complain about it, great. I'm not going to listen to you. If you have that desire to get out and do it, you have plenty of opportunity.
All right. Hey, don't go anywhere. It is a special Mother's Day episode of Nevada Backcountry. We will be back in just a moment. It is Mother's Day 2024. The show is Nevada Backcountry. The stations are 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. If you're just tuning in, we're going through the quotas that just came out for tag numbers, commission meeting. Before I forget here, Dave, I got to bring this up. I was just messaging back and forth with the guys from Western Hunt Fest.
Yeah,
so they had to make a tough business decision. So the Western Hunt Fest event over Memorial Day weekend has been canceled for Reno. They still have one, I think, Colorado Springs coming up.
Yeah.
So you guys, hey, if you want to make a trip out to Colorado, go do that. The reality of the matter is just slightly anemic registration numbers.
Yeah.
And you and I were talking about that. That is a tough time of year to hold a big event like they wanted to. You've got the Fallon River Animal Madness shoot the weekend before.
Yeah, next weekend.
And then on the other side of the proposed Western Hunt Fest date, you've got the Team Whiskey High Sierra shoot at Heavenly.
Yeah, this weekend is SAB's Bonanza.
Yeah, so I mean, just a tough time of year to pull off an event like that.
That big, too. That big of an event.
We're talking to them. In fact, as soon as we get off air here, I'm going to call one of the guys. But great event, cool concept. Just got to find a better slot in the calendar to stick that in. Your Memorial Day weekend just cleared up. I was going to show up for it.
Yeah.
But I
was supposed to do a workshop.
Yeah. I caught a little bit of grief at home for that one. It was one more event in the calendar over a holiday weekend. I'll be up for the other holidays doing stuff out in the woods. So anyway, so Western Hunt Fest, you know, maybe next year it'll slide on the calendar somewhere that works better for everyone. Let's jump right back into the commission meeting.
All right.
Where do you want to start?
Really quick cover. A lot of the regulations, the conversations, there were several of them. Let me see here. I got 5, 6 of them.
What was the outcome on the one and done? The lifetime only tag.
So those were workshops. So these were like first and second readings. So no decision has been made on any of these. So you've got like regulation 518, which is the shed antler and skull pickup. Regulation that was, you know, they had a pretty good conversation about that and they made some recommendations to modify the regulation. And then they're going to bring it back for another reading and another discussion at the next commission,
which is when
that is, what's this, May. So there will be a June commission and that'll be in Lovelock. So again, everybody out there, if you are really serious about Nevada's wildlife, Nevada's habitat, sportsmen's activities, these are things that all of us should be reading and understanding because these all have huge implications on our outdoor recreating, our hunting, our outdoor just getting out there and looking for sheds, scouting, what have you. All of this stuff has huge implications. So if you're not involved in it, you're not trying to provide your input, it's going to
You're
hurt.
Missing out.
You're missing out, and it'll affect things. So, but anyway, so this one's been tabled. So they've all been basically workshop. The lifetime waiting period, Regulation 519, was discussed. This is basically saying there's no longer a waiting period for bighorn sheep, goat, moose.
So mountain goat,
sheep,
and moose.
Once you receive that tag, that's it. Once and done, once in a lifetime tag. That has not been voted on. It's still in discussion, but that is what that regulation's about. Then you go into the electronic tags,
which is
you know, just simple stuff. That's the regulation 522. It'll be on your phone.
Hang on, though. That's not. I don't look at that as simple stuff because I know of an instance where someone was popped. What's the regulation on the physical tag? It has to be attached to the largest part of the carcass.
Correct.
So I know somebody that got popped. It was taped to the horns and the head was separated and the carcass was whole. And that was technically the large. That's going to be interesting to me as far as, man, if I don't have to physically tag the animal.
Yeah.
I can see all kinds of issues there. And
yeah, you're right. I didn't even think of that. That's right, because the tag has to...
By law.
Well, ever since I was 10 years old, yeah, the tag has to go...
Largest part of the carcass, and it's got to... Then the...
And it has to stay with the carcass, even in the freezer. I always...
Exactly.
I tape the tag to the side of the freezer, inside the freezer.
We got those sliding bins and just taped on there?
Taped on there.
So, if we go to that, does all that go out the window? You know, I look at most legislation and regulations as targeting the lowest common denominator, right?
Right.
It's kind of that knee jerk that government likes to do. So how many years do we go with an e-tag thing before people start abusing it? Now they got three deer stacked up and in the freezer and you don't have to have the physical tag on anything anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
Before that pendulum swings back the other way and now we're back to a physical tag.
This is great input that should be discussed at the commission meeting, Henry.
Sign me up, buddy.
Sign you up. Let's drive out to Lovelock.
those are
great points because that's something I didn't even think about until you just brought it up.
When we did the episode on this stuff, I thought, whoa, an e-tag. I could understand for a hunting license.
Yeah.
For like truck or something. Hey, my phone.
Yeah.
But as far as big game stuff, I just see a litany of issues there. That
a lot of hoops to figure out. Yep. And that's why probably it was discussed and recommendations were made and comments, and then it'll go to another reading.
Okay.
So some of these may go through several versions and drafts before they're actually get to the point where everyone's comfortable and they're like, okay, let's vote on this one. This one's pretty clean.
All right.
And then another one was the tag deferral, the regulation 520. Extenuating circumstances
where you can
basically give your tag to somebody else, say, God forbid, but you have a terminal illness or something happened to where you can no longer hunt, you know, whatever it may be.
Let's talk about that for a second because you had a specific instance. God, were we driving somewhere? I don't know. We were hanging out and I was talking about this and like, you know, this doesn't seem like that big of a deal. And you brought up an instance where a guy drew a sheep tag, had like a couple months to live or some had like terminal cancer. And what was the process there for him? He actually wound up transferring that tag to his son.
Yeah, I think it was his grandson.
Or grandson.
Something like that, yeah. So that's kind of how this all came about.
Okay.
This entire regulation was a situation like that and few others where it's like, you know what? These are real events. This is a real thing.
This has merit.
That was a lengthy process because there was no regulation for it. The family wanted to be able to provide the tag to someone else to utilize it. I mean, it was like the parents or grandparents, the grandfather's wish. Like, you know, I'd really like to see this tag be done since I've had 20-something points and I finally got it, but now I'm at a point
or I can't even make it
I can't
out
even,
there.
Yeah, I can't even go outside. I'm not going to be here in 2 months.
Right.
Type of a thing. That's where it kind of hits you. And you're like, you know what? This is something that we need to look into. And instead of having it be this long-winded, long stretched out process, you got to go to the commission. You got to go to the legislature. You got to go to the cabs. You got to, you know, get all these approvals. You got to get all this red tape cut. And let's do a regulation. Let's clean this up.
I could envision God forbid, National Guard member draws a tag, is killed in a training accident or something.
Yeah, stuff like that. Yeah. You know, it's not for like, I got football toe or, You know, I got
chronic diarrhea.
too many chili cheese dogs, and yeah. I'm in the blue tube too much. So yeah. I want to give my tags. I think that's a fantastic one. And all of these right now, none of them were voted on. These have all been workshopped and will be discussed again. So if you, anyone out there, has any concerns with them, get online, read them. They're a simple read, doesn't take long. And if you have any issues, you don't necessarily have to go to the meeting itself, like physically be there. You can provide comments online in relation to any regulation or policy. So that's those.
All right. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll go into some species specific stuff. And unfortunately, I don't think we're going to get into Redding. I had some real good jokes worked up for you going Winchester on arrows. And
oh, man. You guys suck blowing up all my arrows.
So, unfortunately, hey, we'll save that for a future episode. Look, man, between the trying to shoot 88 yards in the hail, Dave going awesome. Winchester on arrows. I mean, it was an event. Don't go anywhere. Refill the coffee. It's Mother's Day on Nevada Back. Final segment of the show. If you're just joining us, it's me, Henry Evans, and David Catalano, and the show is Nevada Backcountry. It's Mother's Day, everybody. If you are rightfully spending time with a mother in your life and you're not listening to us live, you can always get the podcast on Apple Podcasts or go to the website, 991fmtalk.com. The entire show is archived there. You can go back, listen to episodes from a year ago, but we sincerely appreciate you taking the time to listen to us. If you are listening to us live on Mother's Day, big shout out to all the mothers out there. Hopefully, you're raising your kids right, getting them out into the outdoors. We want to go on some of the species stuff. Good news for antelope hunters, right, Dave?
Oh, yeah. Antelope is looking pretty darn good. Quick overview. Like the any legal weapon, horns longer than ears, hunt. Out of all the hunts, only 5 of them went down.
Very good.
But very little. You know, we're talking 1 tag, 2 tags, 4 tags type of thing. 5 tags is about the most that went down, and that was area 7. A few tags went down, area 33 early. The rest of the area either stayed the same or went up. There's quite a few sections that went up 20 plus tags. And that's kind of through the any legal weapon as well as archery and the muzzleloader hunts for longer than ears. They've done very well. So a lot of opportunity there.
We've talked about it before. I think we talked about it with Randy Newberg the first time we had him on the show.
Yeah, antelope hunting fool.
Yeah, oh boy, he loves him some antelope. They were not as affected because of the nature of where they live. They weren't as affected by that real gnarly winter we had.
No.
So they kind of maintained or increased in population.
They've been doing very well. Yeah, kind of stay out in the flats and
right.
in the open there. So they weren't as...
They're not trying to break through 6 feet of snow to find something to graze on.
No. They've been doing very well. That's the one population that's quite healthy, and tags across the board are pretty much up.
Let's talk about bears in the state of Nevada.
Okay.
I'll
give it a whirl.
Hey, for everybody listening, Dave just kind of sat back, cocked his chair back, crossed his arm. So black bears in the state, 100% increase in tags.
Yeah.
And you had mentioned that, I mean, they're being spotted in places never in a million years would you have thought bears would be in. But we're talking like central part of the state in some cases. It's one of those ones where I think... Okay, because of the nature of the topography of Nevada, with pretty serious mountain ranges and then these long, wide, dry valleys, you would think they would kind of hole up in a mountain range. And famously, the Tahoe Basin is littered with the things. Pine nuts are covered in them.
Yeah, you saw a bunch of them in there. And then,
oh, my God. Every day I was in there, I came across bears. Good bears, too.
Yeah.
So if you're one of the lucky ones listening, hey, the text line is 775-884-9910. If you draw a bear tag and you want to do it spot and stalk in the pine nuts, send me a text. Hit us up, because I'll go with you. And they're just all over in there. Some of the theories, I mean, why are bears doing so well in Nevada?
You know, I don't have a perfect answer
We're spitballing here.
You know, this western side of the state has just gotten a lot of bear activity. As we start increasing these populations in these in such a small area, technically, you know, you start talking the Pine Nuts and the Tahoe Basin and going all the way up into northern Washoe, they're going to start pushing east.
Right.
They're not going to go, you know, they're not going to go back into
where the pressure was.
They're going to start moving. And Nevada's got some fantastic corridors. You start looking at some vegetation maps and just mountain ranges and how they are. They can just cruise. Years ago, our biologist had a bunch of them collared, and some of those bears covered a lot of miles.
A couple hundred?
Yeah. And they covered some ground.
Here's what's funny, because Utah has bears.
Yeah.
The expansion is not coming from the east. It's not going east to west. It is predominantly, if not exclusively, a west to east expansion.
Yeah. I don't know what causes that besides probably pressure, you know, other bear pressure and possibly human pressure. Because we've had them in the state for decades, and they have just been residents here, and they're just doing really well. I mean, I would love to get a bear biologist on the show.
Absolutely,
to really
yeah.
give us some of the finer details of our bear population. There's hunters that are spotting bears, and they're just like, I've hunted this area for 25 years and never, ever come across one, and here we are. I've seen three on my hunt this year.
Unfortunately, if we do get a bear biologist on, we're going to have to do the like the blacked out silhouette, the monster voice thing.
Yeah, so right. People go berserk on the whole bear thing.
So remember, there was that guy in Tahoe, I think it was. Bear breaks into the house. He's got kids, families in the house. Whatever it was, the thing started coming up the stairs, something like that. He shoots it and kills it in self-defense, and he got death threats.
I kind of heard through the rumor that they actually left the Tahoe Basin, the family.
Because of the,
I
mean.
They moved out. They left.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we'll figure out a way to disguise their voice, because Lord knows, man, you can talk about anything else.
Yeah, it's a weird thing how it's such a trigger.
People get crazy over it.
It is an animal that is just.
I'm all stirred up now. It's Mother's Day. I got to go be nice to my wife.
One last thing before we do go.
Yeah, get it in there, Dave.
Yeah. CWD was found in California.
Oh, man. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, CWD was found in California, northern part, and pretty close to Nevada.
Yeah.
We also had CWD in Idaho, kind of central, and then it started moving down, and now it's pretty close to the border of Nevada. In Idaho. So hunters out there, there may be some changes in relation to deer hunting in those particular areas in relation to, you know, needing animals to be tested, needing some brain tissue. We need people out there monitoring. When you're out there hunting, you see a deer that's walking in a circle and looking cross-eyed and just acting kind of, you know, stoned. Or
if you can walk up and pet the thing, you probably ought to report it.
Yeah, that's a definite don't do, you know, definitely. Yeah. So you start seeing things that aren't acting like you'd normally see deer acting in the hills. Take some video of it, take some pictures, and then please report that kind of stuff. But there may be some regulations coming down before the hunting season starts, where the Department of Wildlife may be asking hunters to adhere to certain practices while you're out in the field. And it would be greatly appreciated if we can try to keep this out of our state. It would be fantastic, because if it does come into the state and start moving through our herds, you're going to see some serious regulation shifts.
Yeah, don't be the guy. And look, I've been that guy at certain points in my life where I didn't see anything. I'm not saying anything. You know, deny everything, make counter accusations.
Right. This isn't that time.
No, it really is not. Don't be the guy that thinks, oh man, they're going to take away tags if I report this thing. Well, guess what? If the herd dies, yeah, there ain't going to be any tags.
Or if there is, they are fairly infected. I mean, if it gets really moving through the herds, you know, who knows what can happen? They shut down the hunt.
Well, I'd point to the just south of White Bird, Idaho. There was a mule deer herd up there that had CWD in it, and it got so bad they couldn't contain it. Where it did, they eliminated a giant herd of animals because it was uncontrollable.
They just went out there and took care of them all.
Yeah.
And that is one.
It was
way
a last resort. They tried for years, but that was their final solution. Was like, hey, so look, man, if it shows up in Nevada, let's get a handle on it sooner rather than later.
Most definitely, yeah, because you don't want that to be the
final outcome.
The final outcome is like, hey, we need to clear this herd off the landscape,
right?
Because that would suck.
So, well, man, kind of a bummer.
Happy Mother's Day.
Hey, thank you everybody for tuning in, and big thank you to the show sponsors, Legacy Sports International, home of the Howa Superlight, Hunt and House Archery Center, and Truck Envy here in Reno. Thank you everybody for tuning in. Tom Gresham is coming up next.